You have a teenager that you know is a prostitute that's on the street selling herself. It is against the law for law enforcement to go contact that person to ask if she's okay, to ask what she's doing, to find out what she's doing there. We know she's engaged in prostitution. They have made it a crime for me to do anything about it. I can't talk to a juvenile anymore. I can't rescue these serious, innocent victims from the human trafficking element because our state has made it legal.
My guest today is Chad Bianco, sheriff of Riverside County. Today, he'll share with us what he sees as a sheriff of a large county in California and how state policies are impacting the crime rate in California now. And he will tell us how we can turn things around. Meanwhile, we are hearing that the crime statistics are up a little bit. Yeah. And somehow this doesn't add up to us.
That's what the public has been led to believe. I'm in my 31st year right now. Crime is very much higher than what it was in the past. We're in a weird spot. It's scary how we've been misled and how we've been lied to about these bills that they want passed or about propositions that they're passing.
I'm Siamak Karami. Welcome to California Insider. Chad, it's great to have you back on. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
We want to talk to you about some high-profile incidents that has happened in a week. In a week, mayor of Los Angeles, her home was robbed. Adam Schiff was robbed. He's running for the state senate. We had the mayor of San Jose was also harassed and attacked in the middle of the street in downtown area. And meanwhile, we are hearing that the crime statistics are up a little bit. Yeah. And somehow this doesn't add up to us. You have a view that most of us don't have. You're a sheriff for Riverside County. You have a really big county. You see a lot of things. Can you tell us what's happening from your perspective?
Yeah, so my county, we are very large. We're the second largest sheriff's department in the state after Los Angeles. Los Angeles sheriff is bigger, but then it's us. And we've got 2.5 million residents in Riverside County, and our department's 4,200 employees. So we have a lot of deputies out there working in contract cities and in our rural areas. And it is completely obvious to those of us that have been in law enforcement for a long time. I'm in my 31st year right now. Crime is very much higher than what it was in the past. And we are consistently seeing it go up exponentially. But we're in a weird spot because the statistics that the state will show or that DOJ will show or sometimes that the governor will tout is that crime is either down or crime is leveling or slightly up. And that is not the reality. The reality is crime is substantially increasing. Starting back in 2012 with AB 109, that was prison realignment. Then in 2014 with Prop 47, we have gone to a criminal justice system that no longer holds people accountable. Prop 47, Prop 57 made crimes that used to be crimes, not crimes. They made crimes that were felonies that would be reported misdemeanors, so now they don't get reported again. And when you make everything that used to be a crime not a crime anymore, you can see how that would drastically reduce the numbers. So that's what the state is doing, is saying that Prop 47 is reducing all of these theft crimes and everything else because theft is no longer a crime. We don't report that anymore because they increased the threshold to nearly $1,000. When you're personally robbed or you're personally burglarized, you're not reporting it because you know that nothing's going to happen to these people.
It's not worth it for the police to go after it, and they're not going to find them anyways.
Right. That's what the public has been led to believe. And at the same time, from our current form of government, some of our politicians, the majority of Sacramento is very anti-law enforcement. The problem with that for them is the majority of our population respects us. They respect the job that law enforcement does, and they know that we are a requirement. We are protecting people. We're protecting their neighborhoods. So they, in turn, feel sorry for us. They know that we're overworked. They know that we're understaffed. They know that we're underfunded. And so they feel, well, you know, that's only a lawnmower, or it was only my car. I didn't get hurt. So they don't even report the crime anymore. Big business, this started years ago with Prop 47. Kmart's, Walmart's, Walgreens, the big box stores, Home Depot's, the big box stores no longer report crime. They no longer call law enforcement when somebody steals from them because it's been made a misdemeanor. So now it is fiscally irresponsible for them to involve law enforcement to make an arrest that's going to entail their employee having to testify. They're going to have to produce documents. They're going to have to go to court. And for a misdemeanor where there is no consequence, it's fiscally irresponsible for that company to do that. So it's just a big write-off for them. So we have this massive underreporting of crime. We have a public that doesn't report crime anymore. So that tells you just on
even
its surface.
Among the statistics yes, that they're publishing.
So that tells you that crime is actually massively increasing in real life. If you walk out into public, does anybody feel more safe today than they were 10 years ago? Absolutely not. All of these things have gotten worse and worse and worse from 2012 on. 2012 was prison realignment, where the state purposely, because of a lawsuit for overcrowding, they purposely, instead of fixing the problem, they just released all the inmates. And they threw them into the county jail system, which was not equipped for them. And then they caused the same problems and lawsuits in the county jails that they were experiencing. And this is the common sense thing where it was a complete failure. I understand that prison overcrowding was an issue, and there were too many inmates for the amount of beds. But the common sense solution to that is build another prison, not close prisons, not release all the inmates. If you have a family of five and you're in a one-bedroom apartment, you either get more bedrooms, a bigger apartment, a different house, or build more rooms. You don't get rid of your kids. In 2010, 2012, they should have built more prisons. So we have this massive increase of crime. We have this massive increase of repeat crime, repeat criminals, and there's no place to put them because the state is reducing their prison populations and then closing prisons, and it's putting the burden of housing all of these people on our county jails, which our county local systems have never been equipped for this. That's not their role. That's not their responsibility. So fiscally, it's crushing the counties and local governments,
and
it hasn't been reported.
Do you think they were doing this, the people that actually were doing this, they actually believed this would happen? Or do you think they will actually think that this will, somehow the crime will go down and people will not commit those crimes anymore?
That's a very good question. And I have my own personal opinion, and then I have my professional opinion does not want to believe that our government officials, our elected officials, would do this on purpose. I don't want to believe that. But my personal opinion and my law enforcement experience opinion, and knowing what law enforcement, how vocal we were trying to stop these things, we knew what the consequence was going to be, and we told them what the consequence was going to be. And they just didn't listen. I don't know if they thought any different. And the laws are completely against us. And then they want you to believe that now they're going to come in with a solution. And currently, it's the governor and highway patrol. Now, from a law enforcement perspective, I love my brothers and sisters in the highway patrol. They certainly have their purpose and their role in law enforcement. But it is not fighting crime. It is not handling local crime. Their responsibility is nothing but the freeways and the highways. That's what it's always been.
Same thing happened in Oakland.
100%.
You know, we interviewed the former police chief of Oakland, and he told us that the rules they have to deal with, they don't know how to do traffic stops anymore. It's very hard for them because they've lost because they don't do a lot of this enforcement.
Yeah, and I'm not a rocket scientist. I'm a public safety professional, and it's relatively easy. It's right and wrong. It's black and white. We live in a civilized society where we absolutely must have laws to maintain that civilized society. And the people that don't want to participate in a civilized society, they have to have consequences for their behavior. And sometimes we have to remove them from society so the rest of us are safe. And we have completely left that. We have left that idea. That is common sense.
And what about the stores? So we're hearing about these stores, and back in the day, the stores would monitor who's in their store that might potentially be stealing, and they would go after them. Now they don't do anything?
The stores have policies that they will not report to law enforcement. They will not call law enforcement. They have policies where their employees don't stop it. They don't want their employees getting injured. They don't want their employees getting involved where they're going to have to go to court. And they use it, their business model, they just use it as a write-off. Those losses are just a write-off. But the problem is the businesses aren't going to lose that money. That loss is carried on to the rest of us with increased prices of goods. We're creating a horrible situation in the country. And really, California is the model for that horrible situation. We started it long before anybody else. And everyone else, the governments that are doing it, New York was never as bad as California, but now it's a competition to see who can destroy their cities the fastest. Throughout my growing up, I adore San Francisco. I think San Francisco is the most beautiful city. It's the history of San Francisco, even going back to completely burning down and having to, you know, rebuild and everything else. San Francisco is a beautiful city, and look what it has become. You walk down there now, the stores are all boarded up. Everything is empty. Big box stores and big businesses have completely had to leave the area, the downtown area, because of crime and homelessness and all of those issues that come with it. And it's almost like a ghost town now. So one of the greatest cities in the United States of America.
And the world, too.
Absolutely. And look at what it's become. And Los Angeles is not very far behind. And now, I still go to San Francisco. I have to go there for business. But I'm a little bit different because I carry a gun. And I'm a law enforcement officer. So I feel relatively safe when I go to these places, anywhere. But the general public is not the same. Every one of our cities and every one of our metropolitan areas are going to end up like San Francisco and Los Angeles. They are no longer the examples for the country. I came to this state in 1989 for the California dream. When I was a young kid, 11 years old, I came to Santa Monica to play in the Little League World Series. And at 11 years old, I became enamored with everything that was California. I knew nothing about California until then. But now I'm on the beach in Santa Monica. I'm at the pier in Santa Monica. There were kids that we were hanging out with that were host families that would take us downtown and to the beach and to all these things. And I became enamored with the California dream. I knew that eventually I would move to California. And I did. And I found the California dream. I have to admit that I achieved the California dream. I love my life. I love my wife. I love my family. I love everything that I have here. But my kids, they don't have that same attitude of California that I did. Their California dream is now a nightmare. They both work. They can't afford a home. They can't afford to provide, you know, the things that I was able to for their kids. And they're looking at leaving. And it saddens me. Because the greatest state in the country, people are now leaving because of bad government policies. And public safety is the main driver.
Now, can you tell us more about other things that you may see that we're not seeing, that is not well reported in your county and other areas in California that people should know about?
There are so many things that have been made by policy. So if you look at, homeless is one of the big issues. If you go back to the major rise in homeless, we keep calling it homeless. I'm not a fan of calling it homeless. These people are not homeless. We keep saying we need to build more homes and we need to give them places to stay. They don't want a place to stay. They're perfectly happy where they are. And they aren't homeless because every single one of them had a home that they were kicked out of. They were either kicked out by family members, by their spouses, by somebody else, or they lost it monetarily because of their drug and alcohol abuse and dependency. And so then they end up on the street. They are in a drug-induced or alcohol-induced psychosis that now massively changes the chemical makeup of your brain, which is going to cause mental health issues. And so we call it mental health and we call it homeless when the real culprit is drug and alcohol addiction. So if we would label it as that, we might be able to get a handle on this because our bodies, we didn't all of a sudden have a change in DNA. It doesn't work that way. We all of a sudden, the chemical makeup of our bodies didn't change. So why did all of a sudden in the last decade or 15 years, why did mental health now become this major, major, major issue. And if you go back to Prop 47, when Prop 47 was passed in 2014 and changed, where at the time we were able, if you were arrested for drugs, we were able to offer you, or the judge and the DA was able to say, you're either going to go to jail for your crime or you can go to rehab. And they left it up to the individual. And sometimes the judge would say, we're forcing you into rehab. And the people would go to rehab. Sometimes they would get fixed immediately. That was their rock bottom. And they needed the help. And it was like, oh my gosh, thank you for doing that for me. Sometimes they were sober for 6 months. Sometimes they were sober for a year. Maybe only for a couple of days. But at that time, they were at least sober. They weren't committing more crimes. They were getting their medication. Everything was working out fine. And then Prop 47 took all of that away. We no longer have that option. Judges cannot force somebody into rehab. They no longer have the option of going to rehab. So they either have to pay for it themselves or their families have to pay for it, but they have to admit that they want it.
So even the pay was done through the government?
Oh, 100%. And it worked. It worked. We were lied to about everything about Prop 47. The name of Prop 47, the name of the ballot initiative, was called the Safe Schools and the Safe Streets Initiative. It had nothing to do with safe streets, nothing to do with safe schools, and it actually did everything bad that we see today. It caused the homeless issue to, if you go back statistically from 2013 on, it is nothing but a straight increase in homeless and mental issues. And then you see what Prop 47 did. And it really exacerbated our problem and made it much, much, much worse because we can't get them help anymore. And it's inhumane for us as a society to find these people that are mentally messed up because of their drug and alcohol addiction and chemical imbalances in their brain, and we are not helping them get fixed. We just leave them homeless. We say it's a home issue instead of what it really is. They can keep doing drugs. We keep giving them more drugs. We keep having safe dens and making it easier for them. Absolutely. And you're enabling this culture of government dependence. We can't get them into rehab. We have to convince a crazy person, a mentally unstable person, we have to ask them if they want help. Well, obviously they're going to say no, they don't want help, they don't want to stop using drugs, they don't want to get out of their environment and adhere to rules and soberness, and so they say no, and so we can't help them. We can't get them into housing. There's plenty of housing out there. There's plenty of places, nonprofits that want to help, but from the law enforcement perspective, and we're the ones that deal with it every day, those people don't want help. We have to, I mean, it's hundreds and maybe 1,000 times of us asking them to go into some type of service before they actually do it. And when we do get them in, I mean, we feel like what a success, because we finally convinced them to get sober. And then we can, if it is a chemical imbalance where they now have mental health issues, we can get a doctor to stabilize that also with medication, and hopefully they get off of that and they don't need it anymore once the chemicals that are going into their bodies aren't there anymore.
Folks, you've probably been hearing me talk about VyRefi for a while now. VyRefi has been getting a ton of phone calls from you, and I thank you for supporting an investment that actually helps people. A lot of people are talking about this investment, and I'd like to review the basics with you. First off, yes, it's true. You can earn up to 10.25% fixed rate of return that's not correlated to the stock market or to the Fed. You can turn your income on or off, compounded, whatever you choose, and there are absolutely no fees. There are no restrictions on your principal if you ever need your money back, and you'll get your monthly statement with no surprises. If you are not sure if you can trust this economy, this secure collateralized portfolio may be a very good option for you. Just go to investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refi.com. Folks, I take my endorsements very seriously. If you're looking for a solid investment that helps people, contact my friends at YRefi and then tell them Siamak Karami sent you. Now let's go back to the interview. So before Prop 47, you guys would arrest these people? You would see them, you arrest them, and then you would actually send them to the drug court, and then they will evaluate?
100%. I know from people that I have spoken to that have now been sober, that have now are productive members of society, that they chose prison. They chose to go to prison because they'd been in rehab so many times that some of the drugs were still going on in rehab, and they were being, people went to the rehab places knowing that they could sell those people drugs, and that wasn't a good environment. So people would choose jail or choose prison. So they knew they could get sober, they knew they could change, and then they made that choice to, when they got back out, they weren't going to go back there. They changed their environment when they got out. So we know it worked. We know people did choose prison, but you were never forced into prison for drugs. That just didn't happen. But they, in order to get it passed, they wanted the general public to think that, you know, the random person that's out using drugs is going to go to prison for 10 years. That is factually inaccurate. It was told to play emotionally on the voters to get this to pass. So in the modern time, we can, in the last 10 years, we can see that Prop 47 was the beginning of the end for what we see in California right now. But it went back a decade before that. From the late 90s, when crime was so bad that we became hard on crime. We started punishing repeat offenders. We had the three strikes laws that came out that was for repeat offenders that kept victimizing us over and over and over again. And it worked. The political left knew that it was working, so they systematically began to change government and the laws that they were making and the laws that they were changing to reduce that success. And now we have the chaos that we have, that we're in right now. The government, the legislature at the time, said that law enforcement was targeting Hispanics and they were going to deport all of these people. It is complete false. Law enforcement has never been involved in immigration. That is the federal government's role. Now, when we would arrest criminals that happened to be illegal aliens, we would call Border Patrol, or we would call, I mean, HSI is new, but we would call ICE. Customs and Border, we would call ICE, we would call Border Patrol, and we would turn them over to them because criminals would be deported. And the state changed all of that, and they have actually made it a crime for law enforcement to participate or to work with our federal agencies, with ICE, Border Patrol, Customs and Border Protection. It's a crime for us to work with them for border enforcement. And they made sanctuary cities. They made sanctuary state. They made us a state, and then cities followed suit. The cities are irrelevant because the state is the overarching control. So this state, 100%, is sanctuary state that welcomes all of these illegal aliens. They're all coming in through San Diego. They're being funneled in through the 10 freeway that comes from Texas or comes from the East Coast into Los Angeles, into the Southern California region, and then throughout the rest of the state, and law enforcement can do nothing about it. The problem where we have now with an open border is all of those things that we can't ask those people anymore, we can't confront those people anymore, even we know that that's what they're doing, is our border, our government, our federal government will never tell you this, but the people that actually do the work, the border is 100% controlled by drug cartels.
Wow.
100% controlled by drug cartels. And this mass influx of illegal immigration into this country, these people aren't just randomly coming in from other countries and being able to cross the border. It is 100% controlled by the drug cartels. So much so that the drug cartels now are making 10 times, 20 times, 100 times more money than they were making with drugs with humans. So this human trafficking element, this human control element, where they're all of these people that are coming across, they are still paying the drug cartels. They're not coming across for free. No one gets across that border without first having paid the drug cartels to allow them to cross. And then the drug cartels deliver them, they release them at the border, and then Border Patrol and Customs have to take them in and receive them and let them go under direct orders from Washington, D.C. and the current presidential administration. That is the reality of our border. But no one is being told that. When we arrest people for criminal activity, I can't ask them what country they're from if they're U.S. citizens. I can't ask them if they have ID. If they don't have ID, there's nothing I can do about it. They can give me a fake name. It's like, okay, I mean, whatever. And then we're not going to hold them. They don't get held for court, so they get let go, or they get given a citation. They're never going to show up to court. They're here illegally. They're committing crimes. They're criminals.
So people are coming with no ID, mm-hmm. you know, and they cross the border, and some of them might be criminals, you know, and then they...
We know 100% they are criminals. And they are even the criminal elements from these South American countries, the Chilean gangs that are so sophisticated in their theft.
Now they're actually robbing homes here in this area in Southern California. And they...
Absolutely. And when we come in contact with them, if we have arrested them. We have arrested Chilean gang members for committing those types of crimes in Riverside County. We arrest them for the crime, but if they bail out, if the judge lets them go on their own recognizance, whatever the case may be, they're free to go. They are free to roam our streets, our cities,
do it again, right?
And they're doing it over and over and over again, and there's no consequence. The state has taken away the consequence. If there's no consequence for criminal behavior, why would you stop? I mean, that's again common sense. I mean, anybody that's raised kids know that your kids will do anything they can until they get punished, and then that punishment, whatever it is, whether it's a spanking, whether it's a slap on the hand, that's what changes their behavior. I mean, if they touch a hot iron, they're not going to touch it again because that was a serious consequence. And we know that. That's human behavior. Some of our DAs won't prosecute. The judges don't hold them accountable. They give them probation and let them go. And then when we arrest them again, they put them on probation again and again and again. There are criminals out there that are on 5, 6, 7, 8 probations. And there's still never a consequence for them committing another crime. That's the reality of law enforcement. That's the reality of my job and the job that deputies and police officers are doing every single day. And the state is aware of it. They don't care. They don't want to change it. And we are seeing the severe consequence of that today. There's a dishonesty of what they're reporting, and it makes you feel bad. So the instance for the border, we know from a law enforcement perspective, we know who's coming across the border. It's predominantly single males. Almost across the board, it is single males that are coming into the country, and we have no idea who they are. But when the news shows you these things, they show a woman with a little girl. Hmm. And they say, the families, and look what they're, oh. And I mean, I feel sorry for them, but that's not reality. It's once in a blue moon that a woman and a child comes across. It is predominantly single males, a lot of single males with kids that we know. They've trafficked those kids. Those kids have been kidnapped from somewhere else. And now they're using them to come into the country. And we just let them in. And so from the law enforcement perspective, the amount of drugs that are coming into the country are just astronomical because the border is completely controlled by the drug cartel, dropping off all of these individuals. Border Patrol's number one priority is to make sure they process them. 150 people come across the border. All the Border Patrol resources for that day or for that hour all have to go handle all of those and process them. And as soon as that happens, the drug cartels know that now the border is completely open. Now the people sneak through. There are millions and millions of what they are calling gotaways that they don't know who they are, that they watch go around them, Border Patrol. So Border Patrol gets all these people that are willingly giving up, that are paying the drug cartels to come into the country. And then as soon as they do that, they watch the drug cartels now transport the drugs and the other people that are paying big money to get into the country. We know that people are paying over 100.
Those are not even going through the system.
They're
right?
not they're going just, through the system.
They're not even getting processed.
They are not. And we know that it reportedly from informants, from people that are working, that we get, that we turn and we get information from them, these people are paying in six-figure amounts, in excess of $100,000. For the drug cartels to smuggle them into the country. Why? If it's free, if you can just walk
coming,
across.
Like, why are these people paying?
Yes. So they're paying them $5,000 to $10,000 for the people that are coming across, every single one of them. But then the ones that don't want to go through Border Patrol and Customs are paying hundreds of thousands of dollars. The FBI is admitting to everyone that there are millions of people that are coming into this country, paying those big dollars, that are bypassing the system, and they are now in our country. So from a law enforcement perspective, we don't know who they are. We don't know what they're planning, but it can't be good. If it was good, if they were coming to make a better life for themselves, why would they pay $100,000
to come in? The other system,
right? You know. They would just come in. And so all of this was by design, by sanctuary states, by an open border, and now we are bringing all of these people in, and now we're finding out the silly things, like they're flying people in from other countries, bypassing Border Patrol and the border altogether. It's the government that's paying these NGOs to do it. And then we're seeing these flyers that are giving to all of these people that say, make sure you vote for President Biden when you get there. Well, they're illegals. They can't be voting anyway. But we've changed our laws here where we can't ask for identification when you vote. So it's, you have to look back and say, common sense is completely lost out. We are no longer thinking legitimately. Why do you want law enforcement not being allowed to rescue 16 and 17-year-old human trafficking victims? They've made that illegal. I can't talk to juveniles anymore. They've made prostitution legal, basically, in California.
So you guys can't do anything about it.
We can't even talk to them. So you have a teenager that you know is a prostitute that's on the street selling herself. You know she looks young. You know she is underage. It is against the law for law enforcement to go contact that person, to ask if she's okay, to ask what she's doing, to find out what she's doing there. We know she's engaged in prostitution, pandering for prostitution. And the state has made it legal. They have made it a crime for me to do anything about it. I can't talk to a juvenile anymore. I can't rescue these serious, innocent victims from the human trafficking element because our state has made it legal. At the same time, making date rape drugs legal. At the same time, not making sex crimes a violent crime. It is unbelievably bizarre, and it goes against the fiber of a civilized society. It goes against our morals. It goes against our ethics and for law enforcement. I am a protector, regardless of what anyone would think. My makeup is I am a protector. I am here to protect someone from someone else harming them. That's the nature of every call we have is we are putting ourselves in a position to rescue someone, save someone, rescue their property, rescue their whatever the case may be. But we are protectors. I mean, some of the mottos that some of us have, the protect and serve, that really is what it is. And our government is making it to where we can no longer do that.
Why are so many people leaving California? It wasn't long ago, people from everywhere wanted to move to the Golden State to enjoy a better life. Sadly, the standard of living has been dropping in the past decade. Are you like me and wonder why this is happening? I'm Siamak Karami, host of California Insider. In our film, Leaving California, The Untold Story, I take you an intimate journey of love, loss, tragedy, and hope as residents face the prospect of leaving their beloved state. Everyday people like you tell their stories about why they have to move out of the state even though they don't want to. Experts and policymakers also give insights about what's happening behind the scenes. Together, we get to the root cause of this exodus. Go to leavingcalifornia.com to view the first 15 minutes of the film for free. By watching Leaving California, you can be part of the solution. Again, go to leavingcalifornia.com. Can you explain this? This is pretty shocking to our audience that you guys would get in trouble for talking to somebody for prostitution. Like, you can't do anything about it.
Yeah. It was another one of the laws that they passed, that they talked about passing, and they mislead the public to make you think that they're doing good. And everyone, it's common sense.
I think it was
they would
called
want,
Safer Streets Act or something like that.
Yes.
It was a very friendly, the title was...
And yes, and if I propose to you, we want to pass these laws, the Safe Streets Act, that we're going to make our streets safer, you're going to say, great, thank you, because our streets are not safe. So they did it, and you think that they're doing something good, but hidden in that bill, or the real idea of that bill that now became law, was so now we can't hold people accountable for loitering for prostitution, and we can't hold juveniles responsible. We can't interview juveniles for loitering for prostitution. And it has absolutely nothing to do with whether or not they're prostituting themselves. It's why are they doing it? Are they willing participants, or are they being human trafficked by a pimp that is making all of the money that what we're finding is these 12, 13, 14, 15, 16-year-old girls are being human trafficked for sex, that are having sex 10 times, 12 times, 20 times a day, and the pimps are making all the money. The girl or the boy, in some instances, they're getting food. They're getting an apartment out of it, or they're getting drugs out of it, or they're being drugged and they're being kept drugged, but they aren't making money from it. They aren't the ones profiting from these sex acts. They are being victimized and they're being trafficked for someone else to make money. And the state has now made it illegal for us to try and find that out. It's scary how we've been misled and how we've been lied to about these bills that they want passed, or about propositions that they're passing. And it's very unfortunate. And it's what's causing this massive downturn in our ability to keep the public safe. And we're seeing the consequences.
Do you think this trend is going to turn around? Are we going back to how it was in the 80s and 90s, or is there going to be a shift?
Well, I think there is a shift. And personally, I don't want it to be as drastic as it was in the 80s and 90s, because I think that's what drove this part of it. So society in general, whether you want to talk about economics or any type of issues with society, everything goes back and forth. I mean, we're in a political system. This country is the greatest country in the world based on the political system that was designed by the Constitution. And that causes these natural back and forths of society as society ages and as society progresses. But what happened in the 90s and the 80s is the crime was so bad here in California that we had this massive push for sending everybody to prison and putting people in jail and holding all of these people accountable, and these three strikes laws that now we didn't let them out anymore. And so that caused a lot of people to go to prison, because there were a lot of people that had been getting away with it for a long time. And so now all of a sudden we held them accountable and we're putting them in prison. And then that changed the political climate to where they had to fight against it. So while it was a massive switch over here to the incarceration part and hold people accountable, now that it naturally goes back, it went too far back. And so that pendulum got higher to where what we're seeing today. And it's been a longer swing. It hasn't been the 5 to 10 years that it normally has. It's 20 years, 30 years that we are going in this one direction. So the natural progression, what we are seeing, is people are fed up. People that live in California are completely fed up with what is happening with crime in our cities and crime in toward our businesses and the closure of our businesses and all of these things that are happening. The quality of life for Californians has been in a steady decline for years. And there's no, or it appears that there's no turning it back around. But from a law enforcement perspective, I'm seeing the change. I'm seeing our residents are starting to become more vocal. They're starting to question it more. They're starting to wonder why. They're in complete amazement that our government did this behind their backs, when really it was just while they had their blinders on. And now they're saying, okay, enough is enough. And what we are seeing from a law enforcement perspective in Sacramento is our legislators now are realizing that it's all coming back to them. What they have done over the last 10, 15 years is they are now going to be held accountable for. And we know that sentiment is changing, because now they're changing their tunes. the Attorney General, who has done absolutely nothing for public safety in California since he has been there. But now he is even touting, we're going to get tough on crime now. And he currently was sponsoring, or at least co-sponsoring, this movement at the beginning of 2024 of the legislature. I think they had three different bills that they were really touting that they were going to address crime and homelessness and theft and all of those things that were caused by Prop 47. The unfortunate thing for them, though, is law enforcement is now being very vocal and telling the public that it's a smokescreen. It is another lie being perpetrated on the law-abiding residents of California, because all of the issues that they're trying to fix, the drug problems, the issues with theft and the homeless issues, are all caused by Prop 47. Prop 47 was voted in by the public. Even though they lied to us to get it to pass, that was on purpose, because they knew that no matter what happened in the legislature, even if it went conservative, you can't change Prop 47. Because it was passed by the people, the only people that can change it are the people. So in 2020, 2022, we had a bill that was a proposition that was to fix Prop 47. And they lied to us again. They changed the name. They changed the description of the bill, of Prop 20, and people said no to it. Even though they were done with Prop 47, they knew all of the issues that were being caused. But when you read the description of the bill, it was like, oh, I'm not going to support that. So they voted no, and we wanted that passed. That was supposed to pass. That was going to fix Prop 47, but we were lied to. And so now people are done. They want Prop 47 gone. So in some parts of the state, 80% of the voting public want to repeal Prop 47. They want it repealed. 60% of all of California, even Los Angeles, 60% of Los Angeles wants Prop 47 repealed. There are some places that are in the high 80s. We want Prop 47 gone because we all know now that it was a failure. The legislature just wants you to say that they want people to believe that we don't have to replace Prop 47, we don't have to repeal it, we're going to pass these laws to address these little issues, to fix these issues. But the reality is they can't. They can pass the law, but the law is completely illegal to enforce because it's the voters that changed it. So we have to change Prop 47 through the voting process, not through legislation. We have to take it to the voters, and
there's a ballot proposition coming.
We're going to have a ballot. We've got enough signatures now. We needed 550,000. We got 900,000, knowing that they're going to disqualify a lot of them. But it will be on the ballot in November, and we were successful in the name. It's the Homelessness, Drug Addiction, and Theft Reduction Act. So it's very plain and simple. And law enforcement, particularly myself, I'm the chairman of the law enforcement part of this initiative. And so we're going to be very vocal for the public. This isn't going to be a fix-all. This is not going to be this panacea that's going to say, oh, look, we fixed all our problems with changing this. All this is going to allow is that now we have our foot in the door, that we can start making substantial changes to the issues that we have with drug addiction, with homelessness, and with theft. And we're going to start holding criminals accountable for their actions again, because we haven't for a decade.
And Chad, why are you being vocal about all of this? It's not an easy, you're not in an easy place.
It is. It's very much harder because you're putting a target on your back. I mean, there's the investigations, the audits that are being sent on Riverside County from the state. We all know that it's because of this. I've had my county board of supervisors, through their staff and through the executive office, have asked me to tone it down or be quiet because it's causing us problems with the state. And that's more of a reason why I should be doing it. And in the end, I'm a law enforcement professional. That's what I am. My being is to help people. I get joy and comfort knowing that I can help someone. And the position that I am in is that perfect position. I'm the sheriff of Riverside County, and it is my mission to make my entire organization this organization that is the example for the rest of the country on how we should treat our public, on how we should serve our public, how we should run our jails, how we should run our patrol operations, our coroner's bureau, our court system. I want to be the example, the prime example of what everyone should do. And I'm finding that trying to do that brings bad things upon us from government, and a lot of the things that they're doing there are counterproductive to my goals of making Riverside County the safest county in the country.
Do you have any other thoughts for our audience?
I think that what we need in California is we need open dialogue with everyone. We have to be open for other people's opinions. We have to be open for maybe a change, or maybe a change of direction of what we thought was going in the right direction. Maybe it isn't, and we now need to be open into something else, into those corrections. And then also, what I really see is growing up, and even into adulthood, people care about each other. We care about our neighbors. We care about our families. We care about all of these other things we don't want to affect someone else. And we've really gotten away from that, where there are a lot of selfish individuals in society which they don't care about their actions on how it affects somebody else. We see it in simple things, even the way people drive. The way people drive with just complete disregard for anybody else on the road, cutting people off and running stop signs and speeding and all of those things, the complete anti-civil behavior that's in our public school system and allowing our kids to rule things over teachers. From a public safety perspective, I see this as what's causing most of the issues as people are developed, and if people, even their attitudes toward law enforcement when we pull them over and they want to yell at us and tell us they didn't do anything wrong when it's completely obvious everything's on camera now. We need to get back to a point where we're actually caring about other people just as much or even more than what we care about ourselves. You need to care about your local governments. You need to care about the people that you're electing. You need to care about your neighbors. You need to care about your schools. Care about your kids. Care about everybody else's kids. Care about where we are in California. And those of us that are in positions to do the right thing for people and do the right things by people, rally behind us. Rally behind me in my mission to make sure that our politicians are leaders and that are actually leading for the people that they represent. When we're the worst of everything that should be the best, we're not doing it. And I want people to just stand up now and say, okay, enough is enough. We're going to make this state better now. We're going to fix all of the wrongs. We're going to get behind our law enforcement. We're going to support our law enforcement. Public safety is the number one mission, the number one goal, and the number one responsibility of our government. And we need to get back to that. And when we do, and when we are now back to this civilized society of rules and laws, and people are held accountable for anything that is counterintuitive for a civilized society, then I think we can fix the state.
Chad Bianco, Sheriff of Riverside County, it was great to have you on California Insider.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
We have an exciting news for you. At California Insider, we created a new product. It's called California Insider Opinion. This is where our insiders and experts across the state are actually telling you what's going on behind the headlines. When there's a breaking news, a big issue, important issue happening in California, they're gonna come on the screen and tell you what's happening behind the scenes. And these are like 7 to 10 minutes of opinion formats, where the guests are talking to the camera directly, telling you what's happening.
You're paying a tax increase of tens of thousands of dollars every year as a condition of keeping what you already own.
Make sure to look at the description below, because you want to sign up on our newsletter, because a lot of these opinions might be very sensitive that some people in the social media platform may not like. So we're putting them in the newsletter on our website so you can have them. These opinions will actually help you understand the political and policy landscape of California. We highly recommend you follow it.